Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Faced with bipartisan pleas from congressional leaders to take charge, clean house, and do whatever else is necessary to put the Iranian arms mess behind him, President Reagan this morning kicks off his own high-powered study of the National Security Council. But as Jacqueline Adams reports, he still admits to no mistakes and bitterly blames the press for the worst crisis of his presidency.
President Reagan believes the National Security Council review board he launches today, along with the ongoing Justice Department investigation, will end the deepening Iran arms sales crisis. Said the president, upon his return to the White House yesterday evening, "We'll do whatever we have to do to get to the bottom of this, and then we'll make all of the information known to you." But as John Tower, the chairman of the NSC review board, entered Washington last night, he was vague about his chore.
"I can't say anything until after we get our mandate from the president."
Tower's attitude will do little to stop the bipartisan chorus on Capitol Hill, calling for wholesale resignations by the White House staff, a special prosecutor, and a Watergate-style joint committee. In an interview with Time magazine, however, the president discounted, quote, "the frenzy on Capitol Hill." He directed his anger over the Iran crisis not toward his staff, but toward the press. "What is driving me up the wall," Mr. Reagan said, "is that this wasn't a failure until the press got a tip from that rag in Beirut and began to play it up." Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, the White House.
This is Hampton Pearson in Washington. Key Senate leaders are looking for ways to streamline congressional investigations of arms sales to Iran and profits from those sales being funneled to the Contras in Nicaragua. Republican Senator Robert Dole thinks a special Watergate-style committee is the answer.
"You can't have a thoughtful analysis of what happened with 11 or 12 hearings going on."
Senator Robert Byrd, who will be the new Senate Majority Leader when Congress resumes in January, thinks the president should name a special prosecutor because the Attorney General is too close to the president.
"We need an independent counsel now to show that the investigation is being carried on by someone who is independent, who has no political axe to grind, who has no personal self-interest."
Hampton Pearson, CBS News, Washington.
This morning, the Senate Intelligence Committee has resumed closed-door hearings into the Iran arms policy, and among the witnesses was expected to be Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. The Iranian war machine is largely American-made, and to keep it going, Tehran needs U.S. spare parts and ammunition. As David Endelman reports from Paris, Iran has managed since 1981 to keep itself supplied with U.S. spares and weapons.
CBS News has obtained documents tracing a pattern of arms trading with Iran by private American companies that began early in the Reagan administration, long before former National Security Advisor Robert McFarland went to Tehran and touched off the present Führer. The documents indicate shipments from such airports as Miami International through European points and on to Iran of a variety of spare parts, ammunition, and hardware that began in January 1981, shortly after the inauguration of President Reagan. Former Iranian President Bani Sadr told CBS News in an interview that just before he was overthrown in June 1981, Iran had less than 2 weeks' supply of spare parts and munitions and was desperately dealing with American suppliers, apparently with the full knowledge of the U.S. government. Later, he said, after the McFarland mission in 1985, the deliveries expanded to a virtual air bridge, funneling more than $1 billion worth of arms into Iran. Without these supplies, said Bani Sadr, Iran would never have been able to continue and expand its war with Iraq over the past 5 years. David Andelman, CBS News, Paris.
A Great Plains snowstorm has stranded hundreds of travelers, many of them families, headed home from Thanksgiving visits. Marvin Shoemaker and his family had been to see relatives in Missouri and were driving home to Denver when I-70 was closed. They spent the night in Colby, Kansas, and I asked Shoemaker if he had a nice soft bed.
No, I was sleeping on the floor, had blankets.
I gather you hadn't planned to spend the night in Colby.
No, we didn't.
How'd you wind up there?
Howard Patrolman closed 70 off, and they rerouted us right into Colby. Try to get a motel here in Colby, and everything's closed up. No motels, they were all booked up. So the community center was open.
Where had you hoped to be this morning?
At Denver. They had a nice soft bed.
How'd they treat you there in Colby?
Fine, excellent.
You had plenty of company. How'd you spend the time last night?
Just sitting around, trying to do whatever we could do.
Do you think you'll be able to get out today and make it to Denver?
I think so, hopefully.
A small private plane crashed in poor weather yesterday about 4.5 miles south of Colby, killing one passenger. Arson is suspected in an early morning fire at a Planned Parenthood birth control clinic in Kalamazoo, Michigan. No one was injured, but damage has been put at $750,000. 3 days after the Reagan administration exceeded SALT II limits on nuclear weapons, Chief Arms Negotiator Max Kampelman arrived in Geneva for 4 days of U.S.-Soviet talks that start tomorrow. Kampelman said the demise of an old, unratified agreement should have no bearing on efforts to reach a new arms control deal with the Soviets.
I hope we can achieve greater understanding here in the next few days. I believe large areas of agreement have been arrived at in Geneva, particularly after Reykjavik. And what we'd like to do is to look at the areas of disagreement and begin to narrow the differences.
Wet and weary, the spiritual leader of the world's Roman Catholics is ending a marathon Pacific and Indian Ocean journey. Mark Phillips reports.
Pope John Paul performed his last mass of this endurance test of a papal visit in the Seychelles today. About 5,000 Seychellois braved a downpour to observe the mass with the Pope. The rain carried off the papal canopy, so the Pope himself was caught in the downpour. This pilgrimage, which began 2 weeks ago, has set records even for this well-traveled Pope. Records for distance, 30,000 miles. Records for speeches, 50. He's visited 6 countries, Bangladesh, Singapore, Fiji, New Zealand, and Australia. He was seen in person by hundreds of thousands and on TV by millions. His message throughout the trip, a return to the church and its traditional values. A message he traveled farther and worked harder than ever to convey. Pope John Paul returns to Rome this evening. Mark Phillips, CBS News, The Seychelles.
Hollywood lost a touch of class this weekend with the death of actor Cary Grant, at 82, the victim of a stroke in Davenport, Iowa. Among the many paying tribute was Blake Edwards, who directed Grant in Operation Petticoat.
For me, he exemplified the movie star, the handsome, adroit, leading man movie star, who could do just about anything. Great comedian, very romantic and very dramatic. It covered the spectrum.
Grant's lawyer says the family wants no funeral or memorial service. The U.S. dollar is taking a beating on European markets today, reaching a 6-year low against the German mark and other currencies. Dealers are reacting to the scandal in Washington and the impact they foresee on the U.S. economy. While the dollar dropped, gold gained. The morning fixing in London, $399.60 an ounce, up over $10 from Friday's close. And on Wall Street, the Dow Industrial Average is down 22.08 at 1892.15. Our time, 10 minutes past 7.